Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello, welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. This is officially episode 117. I know, friends, we are having large gaps in between the episodes, but that's because we are very busy, quote unquote, business women here at Indigenous Vision. My name is Melissa Spence. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am here with our executive director, Suta Calling Last, who is joining from Montana. How are you, Suta?
I am so good. I'm getting better. Better and better every day is the motto. Busy as all heck. Like as soon as like our, what did we get busy? And March 29th was kind of go time. And it's been, and I'm sorry if I haven't returned your email since then, or, you know, I've been out of contact, but it's literally been back to back events, papers, deadlines, reports, renewals from an administrative side. Indigenous Vision is in the middle of like renewing our Arizona Corporate Commission licensing and certificates, and New York and Montana follows right after that. Then we have insurance and workers' comp, and all those renewals go in as well. And then the EPA project for the chronic wasting disease and environmental stressor and contaminant project, and the mink and otter study, that's also wrapping up. And I had a report due for that. And that report actually landed on some other kind of crazy day. And I've had multiple presentations, panels, meetings every day. And so it's just been so back to back. And somehow I'm still amazed at my ability to like shut off and mom through it. And so that's why I like just ignore some of the text messages that come in. Is like when it comes time to shutting off for Owen, and I just shut off and I don't worry about that email because he's only little once and he's doing amazing. We're about to wrap up first grade and he's going to be mom camping this summer. And so he's going to get to travel with me. We're working on a visitor center with the landowner at Bear Gulch. And it's a kind of like this really kind of like this punk rock zine type approach to a visitor center because it's a private landowner and me, the Indian. And we're just putting together, she has like this great large garage outside the Bear Gulch property. And we're working on putting together a very cute and legit and educational visitor center. And so I'm reaching out to Head Smashed in Buffalo Jump, also Writing on Stone. Those are the two similar places because Bear Gulch, along with having 5,000 pictographs, that we know of because the anthropologist told her to stop uncovering dirt at the bottom of these cliffs because the pictographs just keep going and they just didn't even have the time to document or anything. And so it's got like 5,000 pictographs. It's got roasting pits. It's got a drive Buffalo Jump and a kill site under that near a creek. And it's just a really cool spot on the land. And it's in the southern part of what I really like about this is it's so heavily concentrated Blackfoot as ownership or what it's who the people who are responsible for the pictographs there. And it's on the southern part of our territory. And it's so, you know, I like that it's so southerly, but so Blackfoot, because a lot of people would say where it's at is in Crow territory or, well, if it was in Crow territory, it would have 80% Crow pictographs, but it has 90% Crow Blackfoot pictographs and the rest are Crow. And so it's a very cool spot on the land when we start talking about who was passing through where and what was done where and how long somebody stayed where and what exactly they did on the land. So if you have anything, I'm looking for contributors for every project, right? And then the other project I'm working on, we're writing a grant Kenneth Cook and I of Split Sun Creations. He's also the caretaker at the New York Food Forest, and we're turning that into an experimental food forest, and we're focusing on the management of this area with the concentration around medicinal foods and ability to harvest indigenous foods. And so the forest health needs to be a quality to support culture. And that's a problem in Southern New York because we're contaminated with chronic wasting disease. And so we're going to do a couple of, we're writing a couple of grants. And if you want to contribute to this, we will splash your name all over everything and give you chocolates for Valentine's Day. I love you. But we're going to be trying to experiment with some experimental burning and water cycles to see how that affects the prions and the plant uptake of it. And we're looking for partners to join in on that. I'm going to try to get Penn State Vets. They're some of our conservation working dog partners who have validated that dogs can find chronic wasting disease inside a laboratory environment, but moving that to the outdoor environment is a little bit more challenging, especially if all of the soil is contaminated. So like, what exactly is the dog detecting on? And so I just would like to move that out of the lab and into the field and try to maybe see if dogs can identify and detect a sick animal, one that's maybe not symptomatic yet. And I think that would help with a lot of the aggressive management we need to save future generations and humanity for living sustainable subsistence lifestyles. It's really awful what's going on out there when you think about the environment. We're also working, oh goodness gracious, what have you been up to? I'm just working and working and working. And
thank you for asking.
On and on, I know. But you've also been like very busy and had hardly a minute to put your bags down. Have you even unpacked yet?
I did over the weekend. I have taken 12 plane rides since I last saw you in Washington in the past month and like a week. I've taken 12 plane rides, Sutta, because I had so much going on with the retreat and then the training in Missoula where I got to see you. And then I went to Canada to work on a very special series with SiriusXM's Indigiverse with some former colleagues that I used to work with in the radio biz, I'll quote unquote. So I'm doing a 6-part series for language, my traditional Anishinaabe Mohin language. And I got to interview some elders and some language speakers. And I have a few more interviews coming up because these special episodes that I'm working on aren't going to be released till next month. So I'm still having to like form these episodes. I've got like the base interviews, but I still have to create the content around the interview. So I'm going to be a little bit busy until probably mid-June. And then I think my summer of like pools, suntanning, evening hikes and early mornings out in the desert will officially commence. But I have been extremely busy. We're in the midst of another virtual cultural humility training, which is super awesome. I've also managed to squeeze some rock and roll in between everything and like have a really fun time still doing everything. I've managed to stay healthy, which I am trying not to jinx because I'm still interacting with people. I had a really busy weekend over this Mother's Day. We had the MMIW event on May 5th that I just had to jump off the plane and like go set up for after Canada. It's been nonstop as well, but I'm actually loving it because it's keeping me busy. My body's really sore, but I'm going for a massage today and then I'm going to pick up and continue on the work. And I think the last time I saw you, Sutta, was during that wild full moon. And I was like, I don't know what the vibe was, but I actually felt like for the first time in a long time, like really spicy, I'll say. Remember when we met up in Missoula and there was just a weird vibe everywhere?
Everybody was pretty on edge, yeah.
It was really strange. And I still think about that. I'm like, what was up with that day? But that was the day I landed in Missoula. And then I got to see some of your actual dog training in action, which was really, really cool because I've only ever heard about it, right? And I've seen still pictures, but to be there in person to see you and Kenny actually doing the work and looking for zebra mussels, quote unquote, was really, really cool. So it's been a very active month and a half. So apologies again for our lack of podcasting.
Oh my gosh. And it's just, it's been so fulfilling. And I'm so grateful and I'm excited and I'm like really motivated by the work we do. But I think I made a disconnect like 2 weeks ago and I was going, because in between all of this, I also had to get a recertification in my first aid, wilderness and CPR. And that was in the middle of, it was spread over 2 weeks as well, because usually it's a couple days training and you spend full days. This was a 3-day training spread out over 2 weeks. And I was doing good. I was cooking my food. I was actually finding healthy things to eat at the gas station, I thought. And then just like mentally, emotionally, I was doing good. I was on point. And then physically, I hit a wall and my sugar went like, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed because it happened after my wilderness first aid training, and we went over it in class of signs and symptoms to watch out for with high sugar and low sugar. And I knew I was, but I wanted to avoid processed sugar so desperately that I avoided all of the food at the training. It was all really bad for you, cookies and cakes and pies and cupcakes, and it was all of the processed sugar that we shouldn't be eating for inflammation. And so I avoided it and I was pretty proud. But then I didn't think about, I ate pineapple for breakfast, and I usually don't eat breakfast. I'll usually have, with intermittent fasting, I'll have my eating hour be from like noon to 7 p.m. or noon to 8 p.m. and then I just don't eat till noon again the next day. But I ate before the training and I ate like this big container of pineapple, and that must have spiked my sugar. And then for lunch, I had flank steak, which is just protein. And I must have like really needed that extra sugar lift, because then by 7 p.m., I was cruising out of town and my sugar drops, and it drops fast. Like I had never actually felt, you know how you're like feeling like, oh, I think I need to eat now. And that had happened just as I was leaving the training. And I was like, okay, I need to go get something to eat and then head out. And then the hungry feeling went away and I forgot about it. And it was so dangerous, because when it came back again, it was like I got the shakiness of low sugar. I got the extreme exhaustion. And I always know it, where I'm like, oh, I'm so tired, I could cry. Like even just on a regular night where I stay up late and I get too up late, it'll get emotional. And I knew, and so I like saw a Dairy Queen and I whipped in there and I'm like, I don't care about processed sugar or anything like that. I just need to up my sugar, because I looked around my truck and I usually keep gum or like I always have snacks on me, but I had been on the road for over a month at this point. My truck was a mess. I was not organized. I couldn't find any snacks and no gum. And I ordered a slushy and I took a big drink, and it was the most effed up feeling I had ever felt in my whole life, because I forgot about how easy I get brain freeze. And then I was already feeling like the low sugar, and it was pretty serious low sugar because I was shaking, and then I had broke a sweat. And that's when I get scared, when I start breaking the sweat. And so I pumped my AC on and I took a drink of the slushy. And then I got brain and chest freeze on top of all of this. And it felt like my body was tinfoil on the inside and this crumpled in. And I had to sit there and I just held my head in my chest for like 2 minutes. And I was like, what did I just do? And I knew I was going to get through it. I knew I was going to survive, but I just felt so stupid for being like leaving where I just left and then going through. And I'm like, I need to take better care of myself, and because my snacks, they were in the truck. It was just, I had started, I'm almost home, I'm almost done, just throw stuff in the back of the truck. And it was awful. But I had, today, fast forward, I'm fine now. And I monitored my sugar for like the week after, and I was getting pretty low. I was down in the 69, 70, 71. And I noticed when I started to feel kind of icky, it was already in like the 89, 90 area. And so I don't know what my sugar was at that, but it was one of the most effed up feelings I'd ever felt health-wise. And I've thinking about Mother's Day, birthed a baby without drugs, and I would not I would birth a baby without drugs again before I go through low sugar and brain fees.
Oh my goodness, that's a hardcore statement.
I know, right? But it's I just left a meeting with somebody who shared a dream with me about water and water spirits, and it also like kind of caught me off guard, and it struck me with how similar it was to my dream as a child. And what the gist of it is saying is that the water people or the water spirits are having a struggle and a fight, and they literally need us to acknowledge them and give them some energy. And even that tiny little bit of acknowledgement and energy helps them win this little war that they're enthralled in and needing help from. And I don't know who believes in energy like that, but dreams and dreaming are really important. And I think there's a lot about the human body that we don't know at the energetic level.
And, I agree.
Right. And then I'm so happy you got to spend time like that. It's such an exciting project, the Language and Elder Project. For you, what is, because I don't feel like you've ever... Is this the first time you get to work with elders directly?
Yeah, this is the first time. And like I said, I've never pushed myself towards that way because of my previous rock star lifestyle. Like I did a lot of crazy stuff and it just didn't feel right to be around culture and ceremony. Like deep down on some like level, it just didn't feel right to be around. And I don't know, that might just be me, but here I am now being pulled towards it naturally and being invited, and I'm letting it all happen. So it was really beautiful to speak with elders about the language, and I've learned already so much about it and how poetic it really is and how there's just no way you can really translate the language into English. You lose so much, and that we just had a beautiful way of communicating and just describing our world and ourselves and everything. So I'm super stoked to learn more because this has just opened a floodgate for me, which I've sort of been waiting for patiently. And I was telling this elder, I never told anybody this, but I was like, you know, one time, this is about maybe less than a year ago, we'll say, I was, you know, when you're in between sleep and dreams, I was kind of like in between that area, and I heard, I don't know if it was gibberish, but I just heard the language, and it was like someone speaking in an androgynous voice in the language, and I couldn't decipher it. I was like, is this really the language, or is this my brain making up gibberish to, like, I don't know, comfort me in some way? But I told the elder that, and she was like, wow, the language visited you, which was really cool. So I'm looking at different types of ways to learn now and be exposed to it on not just a social media way, which is how I've been. And I really, you have to live in the language is what I've learned, is what I'm trying to say. You have to live in the language. You can go on social media and learn bits and pieces here, but you really got to live in it. So I've learned that. And I'm super excited because it really connected me to what I needed to be connected to when I visited Winnipeg. And it was really nice to not just see my mother and my family, but to work with these people who are from the same nation as me. It was really uplifting and empowering. And it really broke down that imposter syndrome that I have with my own culture. So it was monumental. And during that time, we were just talking about this before we hit the mic, before we hit record, was that we're having technical difficulties with our, you know, modern day devices. And while I was in Canada, the day before everything happened, my computer died. So I was thrown into this chaotic phase for a few hours, but it all worked out in the end. And it was an upgrade. It was another upgrade in my life that was seen as like a wrench in the system. But in the end, here I am now with like this new setup, and my mic sounds better than ever. And here we are recording another podcast. I'm about to put these episodes together for everybody to hear. And I'm like representing my language. Like, it's just very surreal right now. So to like, from the retreat to like here is just getting better and better. And I'm just going with it. I'm really just letting it all happen. So thank you for being my partner in crime in all of this, because it probably wouldn't have been possible without you.
Oh, no, it would have. I think all of our paths find our way to us, no matter whether we want it or not. It's just like, you know, if something's meant to be, it'll keep re-entering your life as an opportunity. Yes. And it's up to you whether or not you want to take it.
To notice. That's all you got to do is notice it. Like when you were saying, acknowledge the water. I do that all the time. Every time I'm engaging, because I'm a bath person, I'm not a shower person. So I like to experience water when it's calm. That's why I love taking baths. So I have that moment with the water like daily, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot more power there. And I think that's also like a cultural misunderstanding, is like when, you know, we're saying water is life, or we have that saying in our language where water has life, or it's a life of its own. I think that cultural disconnect is lost in translation. It's not water is life. It's an essence of life. I think essence of life is the more appropriate term. Yeah. It, because whatever that essence is, energy is responsible for so much, from the tiniest little soil microbe and frog to us. And then there's so much we can't see. And this guy, he shared his dream with me, and it kind of inspired me to maybe put a winter gathering on together, a virtual gathering of people sharing their water dreams specifically. And so a lot of times people don't get together to share their dreams, but I'm a dreamer. And the family design, our family design, the Calling Last family design, is a bunny. It's not a bunny rabbit. It's a butterfly is what that translates into. And it's a butterfly lodge, or it's not a lodge, it's a symbol. We're just a dreaming family. And so we're those Indians who are like, oh, I had the best dream, or I just woke up from this dream, or remember that dream we had. And our dreams are vivid. And so in my family, I think dreaming is also a practice, right? A cultural practice even. So a lot of people in the Western world will denote a lot of like weird things to dreams and how they're translated, and even like how foods can interrupt your dreams and what you consume right before that hour before bed. So it's a really cool practice to get into, and there's a way to grow and enhance your dream power. And then there's a way to like even meditate and focus and practice on extending a dream or continuing a dream, so you can have a dream over multiple nights. And so there's like these, and I've never found a book like it, and I've never actually even looked on YouTube. It's just like when my mom asks me when I get up, or when I get together with elders, and just hearing people talk about their dreams as something real and valuable, a resource and a tool used for navigation and decision making. I don't know. I kind of inspired me to get together, because him and I had a similar dream. And this is a non-native Napiquan, a white guy. He was with a native lady and lived kind of like the native lifestyle, environmental lifestyle, and had this dream about water people or water animals and their struggle. And then it very similarly, like the general theme between his dream and mine is that, oh my goodness, this dog is going to start making ball noises. He likes to get my attention when I'm on this mic. but the general theme between the two dreams was water spirits fighting an actual battle, energy levels, some good and positive things, and some dark and life force destructing things, that essence of balance in the world. And I think that there's a lot of, I never thought we'd take this turn. I think there's a lot of things in this world where, you know, the balance between, I don't want to say good and evil, because that's just a ideology and a lifestyle. Like, I don't think anything is evil, but I think something can be pretty bad. And I think even pretty bad things can turn their way around or even have place and purpose. But there's balance required, right? Like death is a thing that people are scared of and associate a lot of like grief and horrible things with, but it's just that next step in our journey. And we just lose this physical form, and we maintain ourselves the way my grandpa described it to me. He prepared me for his death for like 30 years. So excuse me if I talk about it with what seems like some callousness, but I think about it in the same way that a lot of people think about it. But I think he really wanted to prevent my energy when he did go from being totally consumed by self-destructing habits or thoughts, or because all of those habits and thoughts, they turn into a life way, right? Like a lifestyle. I'm rattling off. Holy schmoly. It's been a time. Like,
it's been really crazy. And I know that it's been like over 3 weeks since our last podcast, but we are going to record a few more for the summertime. So mm-hmm. if you're missing us, don't worry. We'll be back sooner than later.
Yeah. Everybody have a beautiful start to their summer, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast, or the Ivy Podcast. We appreciate your support and hope that you are enjoying our content. If you want to help us further, you can always like, share, and review so that we can reach more listeners. If you want to support any of our projects, please visit our website, indigenousvision.org. You will see the support button on our homepage. And of course, we are on social media, on Facebook under Indigenous Vision, and on Instagram at Indigenous Vision Media. Thank you so much again. We will talk to you soon through this wonderful platform. Until then, have a fabulous week.